Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Obituaries, today's date, August 24th. Grand Saline. Services for Pat Hodges, 74, of Grand Saline, are scheduled for 2 p.m. Wednesday, August 25th, at Bartley Funeral Home with Kyle White officiating. Intermittent will be Woodside Cemetery. Ms. Hodges passed away August 20th in Dallas. She was born November 21st, 1946 in Dallas to Edward Ray and Maddie Mosel Elliott Hodges. Death notices. Lee Gail Henson, Odessa. Lee Gail Henson, 69, of Kermit, died Sunday, August 22nd, 2021 in Odessa. Funeral service will be scheduled for 10 a.m. August 26th at Family Services Funeral Chapel. Burial will follow at the Palms 23 Cemetery. Brother Joe Moeller is officiating. Arrangements are by Family Services Funeral Parlor of Kermit. Esperanza Z. Navarrete, Odessa. Esperanza B. Navarrete, 84, died Saturday, August 21st in Odessa, Texas. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Tanya Rochelle Newton Griffin, Odessa. Tanya Rochelle Newton Griffin, 54, of Odessa, Texas, died Monday, August 16th in Odessa, Texas. Celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m. Thursday, August 26th at Bethlehem Baptist Church. Odessa. At the family's request, cremation has been selected as alternative means of burial. Reverend Darren Willis is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. David Leslie Poyner, Odessa. David Leslie Poyner, 69, of Odessa, died Friday, August 20th, 2021 in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 10 a.m. August 25th at the Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel. Pastor Matt Jones is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and the Funeral Home of Odessa. John Edward Hippie Ramirez, Odessa. John Edward Hippie Ramirez, 29, of Odessa, died Thursday, August 19th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. August 26th at Odessa Gospel Lighthouse Church in Odessa, Texas. Burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery. Pastor Eddie is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, August 24th, 2021. Education section. Respiratory therapist goes from MC to MMH. By Rebecca Bell. I've always wanted to work in a hospital and be involved in the process to save lives, Jordan Weatherman said. However, I didn't realize how truly rewarding this would feel until I was part of the NICU, Neonatal Intensive Care Unit, team while I was serving as a respiratory therapist intern. I was able to help a human at the start of life. I remember going home thinking that I played a part in ensuring this person will lead a normal life. Weatherman recently graduated from Midland College with an Associate of Applied Science degree in respiratory care this past May. I didn't immediately choose respiratory career as my field when I graduated from Permian High School. I first went to UTPB for 2 years. At the time, I thought I would major in kinesiology. As I got older, I realized that I wanted to have a career that helped people in a more hands-on approach. So I spent 12 hours shadowing various medical personnel at Medical Center Hospital and observed how the respiratory therapists are experts in their field. Nurses and doctors rely on them to be the experts in breathing therapeutics. I did some research on schools that offered training to become a respiratory therapist, and fortunately, there was a program close to home at Midland College. Weatherman began taking classes at Midland College in August 2019, while also working approximately 40 hours per week in the retail industry. He also maintained a 3.7 GPA while attending school full-time. I had to stay focused on my schoolwork, he said. Fortunately, I had great instructors. The program chair during my first year at Midland College was Bob Weedman. He was great and had the program laid out well. He retired in spring 2020, and I was a little worried about the future of the program. I just couldn't see anyone as great as Bob stepping in to fill his shoes. Bob was incredible and full of knowledge. I remember being frightened and sad that I wouldn't be able to spend my last year in the program soaking in all his knowledge. However, the new program chair, Callie Edison, is every bit as good. She does a phenomenal job and is full of energy. She did everything she needed to do to get us up to speed during the pandemic and ready to assume professional careers. She and the clinical director, Stan Middleton, make a great team. All three of these people are experts in their field of respiratory care. They provide a lot of information and present it in an easy-to-understand way. The program also provides great hands-on skills training. In November 2020, during his last year in the program, Weatherman was hired part-time as a paid respiratory therapist intern at Midland Memorial Hospital. As such, he was able to assist with patient care in coordination with licensed therapists. Weatherman has been able to work with several patients who were suffering from breathing-related issues resulting from COVID. As awful as COVID is, it presented a great learning experience for me. It also made me realize that I chose a career where I can be on the front lines and a valuable member of the patient care team. Weatherman is now a fully licensed respiratory therapist and is still working at Midland Memorial Hospital. As such, he works 36 hours per week and prefers the 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift. There's a great team of professionals who work at the night shift, he explained. When I am called into a patient's room in the evening, it is usually quieter. There aren't as many people in the room. Most of the time, it's just the patient and me, and I can really work one-on-one with the patient. Weatherman said that another reason he enjoys the night shift is that his girlfriend Lily Tran, a nurse in the intensive care unit, also works the same shift. When the couple have time off, they enjoy traveling and hiking. They've been on hiking trips throughout Texas and Colorado, and they especially enjoy the Northwest United States. Weatherman said that one day they hope to travel to Japan, Korea, and Singapore. Petroleum Museum to break ground on STEM Center. Officials with the Petroleum Museum, local foundations, Midland College, the University of Texas Permian Basin, and the Midland and Odessa school districts will be on hand Tuesday for groundbreaking ceremonies for the STEM Education Center. The building will be 8,000 square feet with classrooms and storage space, along with a 2,000 square foot outdoor learning patio, a Harmony Park, and building blocks. The center is designed to help develop children's love of science in an engaging learning environment. The groundbreaking ceremony will be at 10 a.m. on the museum grounds. Construction is expected to take 9 to 12 months. Fundraising for the $6 million project has been completed with lead donors, the Scarborough Foundation, FMH Foundation, Maybe, and Abel Hanger Foundations, and other businesses and individuals. Midland West Rotary Club hosts Scholarship Luncheon. The Midland West Rotary Club hosted a scholarship luncheon on August 17th to honor the recipients for the fall 2021 semester at Midland College. The recipients are students in the Applied Technology Division, namely Miguel Figuero, Jimmy Espinoza, Juliana Cervantes, Rhett Clark, Hector Montez, and Marissa Schuler. Midland West Rotary wanted to provide scholarships specifically for applied technology students because of their importance to our community, yet oft-overlooked need for assistance. There will be another distribution of scholarships for the spring semester. That scholarship luncheon will be hosted in January. The Midland West Rotary Club hosts two fundraisers each year. The Shoot for the Future Clay Shoot, held in the spring, funds these scholarships, while the fall fundraiser funds other projects of the club. The next Shoot for the Future Clay Shoot will be held on Friday, March 11th. Information about sponsorships for that fundraiser will be available soon. The Rotary's fall fundraiser is scheduled for October 16th. On August 16th, UTPB and industry officials announced the 2022 dates for the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference. The conference, which will take place February 22nd to the 24th in Midland, connects industry leaders and researchers, sharing best practices and cutting-edge approaches to some of the oil and gas industry's most pressing issues. The UT Permian Basin College of Business Advisory Council, with Jim Woodcock at the helm, planted the idea for the conference in 2017. The Shepherd Leadership Institute at UTPB is the home for the PBWIEC, allowing students to benefit from the conference proceeds. Those expected to appear at the conference include Christy Craddock of the Texas Railroad Commission, Don Evans and Tracy Bentley of the Permian Strategic Partnership, Robert Kaplan of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, Ben Shepherd of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, and Todd Staples of the Texas Oil and Gas Association. For more information or to register, go to waterinenergy.com. Energy.
Hello, this is Cindy reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 22nd. Other voices. The Idle American. For a few dollars more. Don Newberry writes, stories of gasoline price wars were common in Texas around 1960, when regular gas sold sometimes for 10.9 cents per gallon. Competition for college biology teachers, however, wasn't all that common. Dr. Jack Stanford, retired with his wife Gilda in Brown County, remembers how two colleges tried to hire him. Fresh with his master's degree in botany from Texas Tech in 1966, he heard of a biology opening at Hardin-Simmons University. With Gilda and nearly one-year-old son David, they visited Abilene. Sure enough, he was offered a $5,000 contract. He doesn't know how Dr. Guy Newman knew about Jack's offer at HSU, but the longtime Howard Payne president somehow tracked him down in Abilene. He, too, was seeking a biology prof and asked about his HSU offer. Stanford, who later completed his doctorate at Oklahoma State, was proud to say that his HSU offer was $5,000. Without hesitation, Newman offered $5,500 with promise of free tuition for his children and a 50-cent discount for lunches in the college cafeteria. Jack accepted immediately. Dr. Stanford has no recollection of receiving the luncheon discount, but David and younger brother Stephen did take advantage of free summer school classes. All of his 33 years in higher education were at HPU, where he retired in 1998. To this day, he keeps up with colleagues and a host of former students, many of whom are in their late 70s. There's been much friendly competition between HPU and HSU over the years, but Dr. Stanford's account was an interest piquer, since the persuasive Dr. Newman offered me $3,000 to stay on upon my 1961 HPU graduation with a BA degree and limited experience. Colorful seems a bit pale to describe Dr. Newman, always the snazzy dresser with a bubbly disposition and unbounded optimism. He sometimes was overly optimistic. "We're going to organize a baseball team," he told incoming freshman Dan Crawford prior to his 1960 enrollment. Dr. Crawford, longtime Southwestern Baptist theological professor, enjoyed a partial baseball scholarship all 4 years, but the college didn't field a baseball team for another quarter century. Dr. Newman was a revered leader, greatly loved by Dr. Crawford and this columnist. Dr. C. E. McCarver, late VP for Development at HPU, said, "Dr. Newman has more ideas in a day than most people do in a lifetime, and some of them are good." It was Dr. Newman's dream to introduce an interdisciplinary honors program to be known as the Douglas MacArthur Academy of Freedom. It was housed in the former administration building of Daniel Baker College, which was acquired by HPU in the early 1950s. I heard him tell of visiting the late general in his Waldorf Astoria apartment in New York City. "I wanted his name to be associated with our program," he explained. He indicated that General MacArthur was cordial but seemed surprised that Dr. Newman would make such a long trip to secure the World War II heroes' blessing of the program. "They've built libraries, streets, parks, and monuments that bear my name," General MacArthur related. "But you're the first person ever to request my permission." Dr. Newman's own pilgrimage was unique. A graduate of Baylor University, he enrolled there at age 30 upon deciding to become a minister. He and his first wife had 3 children, but she died of cancer in her late 20s, so the challenges of college and handling the duties of a single parent hung heavy. Kidded unmercifully by other students about being an old freshman, Dr. Newman sought the dean's counsel about how to respond. He was advised to tell them you are a special student who will be a sophomore next year. He and Dr. Thomas H. Taylor, his predecessor, get my vote as the all-time great presidents of 132-year-old HPU. They served for 24 and 17 years each, respectively, for the period 1927 to 1972. Letters to the Editor from the OA for Sunday. "Fix the problem before it gets worse," Skylar White, Goldsmith, writes. "Why is it that a governmental entity can get away with the creation of an environmental disaster and not be obligated to go back and fix it? And to make sure they really screw it up, they're going to spend $35 million of our money to hide their negligence. Folks, TxDOT is fixing to spend a bunch of our public money to put one of their messes out of sight. Before they do that, I think the public who's paying for it should be reminded of what they're trying to forget. Back in 2013, TxDOT, Pecos County, and the MPGCD decided they'd plug a well about 5 miles south of Imperial on Farm to Market 1053, because that well had artesian flow that was weakening the highway. Instead of hiring a competent contractor and letting him figure out the most prudent course of action, the bureaucrats decided to do it themselves. They intended to plug off the San Andres formation where the water was coming from. Because of the age and poor condition of the well bore, they could not get to their goal. These bureaucrats, come well engineers, decided they'd fix it by pumping a cement plug at the surface and let the water keep flowing below. Big mistake. $500,000 down that hole, and the San Andres water is still flowing and washing out the salt formation below. When the surface lost its support, the sinkhole started. That sinkhole is still growing, and the salt is polluting the surrounding freshwater aquifer for miles around. It will continue to do so until the San Andres zone is plugged off. The good news is that the technology and expertise to fix the sinkhole permanently is readily available and will cost a fraction of the $35 million that TxDOT is wanting to spend to move the highway. Directional drilling is a proven method of getting to impossible to reach hydrocarbons. They can set up a drilling rig to the side of the sinkhole and guide the drill bit to get to the spot that cement needs to go. The best part is that it will cost a fraction of what the road move will cost and will take much less time and inconvenience. Before TxDOT is allowed to go and spend a pile of our money to move a road, they should fix the mess they made. The money they save could be spent fixing the potholes scattered around the Permian Basin. And as a bonus, it won't add mileage to the folks traveling from Fort Stockton to the north. I know the water around Imperial stinks, and a lot of people think it's not the prettiest place around, but it's our home and we like it here. We don't want this sinkhole to continue to grow and our groundwater to become more polluted. Before TxDOT hides their mistake, they need to go and fix the problem before it gets worse. For those ignorant of history, Doug Moss, Odessa, writes, 76 years ago, September 2nd, Japan signed the formal unconditional surrender documents in Tokyo Bay on the deck of the battleship Missouri. The finality of the worldwide conflagration that consumed tens of millions of lives and unfortunately set the stage of history for communist subjugation and mass murder of millions more in Eastern Europe, China, Cuba, Cambodia, Vietnam, Africa, and others, but I digress. What kept Japan from fighting on to the bitter end? Why didn't they sacrifice another million or more people? Why not cause another 500,000 Allied casualties? Another 1 million Japanese casualties? Simple math. Because we obliterated 2 Japanese cities with nuclear bombs in early August, Emperor Hirohito publicly announced Japan's surrender on August 15, 1945. Had he not, invading the Japanese home islands would have made that surrender 75 years ago. We have lost nearly all those who performed the terrible grinding horror of that war to keep us free. Did those rugged individuals endure so much, lose so many in their youth, rebuild their lives, grow the country we grew up in, only to prepare us to cede our freedoms to a bunch of self-serving, spoiled brat politicians' notion that socialism should reign over us? I think not.
Thermography as screening tool. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm a healthy woman. I recently had a whole-body thermography exam that highlighted my thyroid rather dramatically. Should I get a blood test for my thyroid and or an ultrasound? Signed, ED. Answer. Thermography is a technique looking for differences in skin temperature. Back in the 1970s, it was found that breast cancer can lead to warmer temperatures on the skin overlying the tumor. Unfortunately, there has not been any evidence that thermography has any advantages over mammography. Recent research suggests that there may be a role in the future of thermography, possibly in combination with mammography, but the data on breast cancer shows poor accuracy. An overactive thyroid gland may also lead to high blood flow and warmer skin temperatures. So, theoretically, thermography could be used to diagnose thyroid tumors and hyperthyroidism. Again, there may be potential in the future, but in my opinion, thermography is not an appropriate screening test in a healthy person, although I recommend against getting a screening thermography exam. Now that you have documented an abnormality, your doctor may feel obligated to do an evaluation. Since the whole thyroid was abnormal by thermography rather than a specific area, as it would be in the case of a tumor, a set of thyroid function blood testing may help relieve the anxiety you must feel with this abnormal test. Screening tests need to be proven both safe and effective. False positive tests lead to anxiety and unnecessary follow-up testing. False negative tests can keep a person from coming to the doctor to get evaluated. Screening tests require a very high level of evidence before they can be recommended, and thermography is not yet ready to be used in screening.
This is the Dear Abby column. Birth mother reconnects with biological son. Dear Abby, when I was an unmarried 18-year-old, I had a child out of wedlock. Unsure that I could provide for him, I chose to place him for adoption so he would have a better chance for a good life. This year, we connected through DNA. The reunion has been great, even though I choose to remain in the background because his mother is still living. Would it be appropriate this fall and winter to include him in my holiday festivities, as long as it doesn't interfere with the time he should be spending with his family? And after his mother passes away, what role should I play in his life? His father is deceased, and he and his adopted brother are estranged. Signed, Biomom in Texas. Dear Biomom, your son should have told his adoptive mother about the reunion, regardless of who initiated it. I think it would be better for everyone if she was included. A way to do that would be to thank her for taking such good care of your son and helping him to become the man he is today. I do not think secrecy is healthy. If it backfires, there will be deeply hurt feelings because of the subterfuge. At this point in your son's life, it's too late for you to be his mommy. However, you can be a good friend, since his only family now is the woman who loved and raised him. Dear Abby, I have been dating a man for almost 3 years. He's retired. I'm still working. He refuses to stay with me during the week because I need to go to bed early. I see him only on the weekends. Am I wrong for wanting him to stay with me during the week? I feel like we really don't have a relationship. My previous boyfriends would stay with me every night. Am I doomed with this man? By the way, he's been married 4 times. Signed, Once More in Michigan. Dear Once More, wake up. The man you have been dating isn't going to change. He has struck out at marriage 4 times and may have plans during the week that do not include staying with a sleeping beauty. If you want more companionship than you're getting, you're going to have to seek it elsewhere. Dear Abby, my daughter is getting married. Her father and I never married, but legally he's listed as her father. For the past 40 years, she has used my last name. Well, her wedding invitation arrived today, and her father's name is on it. Mine isn't even mentioned. My parents and I raised her. Her dad was around, but never an active father. I raised her, but he gets the glory and privilege of walking her down the aisle. She says I'm being a wacko. Must I accept this and let it go? I feel so hurt that I really don't want to go to the wedding. Signed, Loving, Left Out Mom. Dear Mom, I understand your feelings. If you haven't asked your daughter why she chose to do this, you should. At the least, you deserve an explanation. Please understand that if you refuse to go to her wedding, it could create a permanent rift. There may be grandchildren and milestones you could also miss. Of course, the decision is yours to make, but since you asked me to weigh in, I'm suggesting you take the high road, attend, and support your daughter on her day. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.